Ryder was dead in her arms, the final blow dealt when she watched the murder of her dragon.
"I thought you said you could save her,"
she screamed at Roan.
"She didn't want to be saved," was all that he said in reply, sadness in his tone.
The Dragonia gave chase, but quickly stopped. Ciri was the fastest, outdistancing them as she charged northward. Once they were alone again, Raven halted her flight, commanding her to hover in place as she took in the hopelessness of the situation. She was certain the ships had seen the command from Ryder, but they continued to churn westward. Evidently Shanalyn's treason extended to her captains.
How could I have been so blind?
She'd been so focused on Whisper, on the decisions she had to make, that she'd become complacent. She hadn't spent nearly as much time with her soldiers and dragon masters as she should have. And the entire time, Shanalyn had been whispering in their ears, probably promising them riches and power and who knows what else. One ship did, however, turn away from the rest, angling south as commanded. Even from this height, she could make out the reptilian beasts on deck. The Guanero.
Goggin, she murmured.
Roan said,
"You still have an ally."
Even as she realized the truth of his words, the Dragonia launched themselves at the ship, streaking past it, shooting bursts of flame across the wooden vessel. When they were finished, the ship was an inferno, and Raven's heart was a smoldering wreckage.
"This is my fault," she thought,
sickened by the sight of men, women, and Guanic leaping from the sides of the ship. The dragons left the ship to burn, the Guanero and Guanic to drown, speeding after the ships.
"Ciri, turn around," she said,
barely loud enough for the dragon to hear.
"We have to save as many of them as we can."
Even as the dragon began to wheel about, Roan said,
"No."
"What?"
"You can try to come back for them later. There's no time. Go to Faerea. Stop this before they're all dead."
"But Goggin. But my loyal warriors. I am the Empress. I am a sacrifice."
Whisper's words.
"I couldn't lose you, too."
"I'm sorry, sister. I'm so sorry."
She gave the command, and Ciri soared westward. Soon the shimmering, iron-sheathed trees of Ironwood came into view. At long last, she'd reached Faerea. It was here, she knew, that she would die. Part 3. Gwendolyn, Bane, Roan, Gareth, Goggin, Rhea. "In the beginning there shall be death and there shall be life. And they shall be two sides of the same coin." The Western Oracle. 104. The Eastern Kingdom, Faerea. Gwendolyn Storm. Gwen raced outside, feeling a strange calm set in as her hero mark flared on her cheek. Somehow she knew this day would come, as if she'd been preparing for it her entire life. The events of the dragon massacre, more than 8 decades past, flashed through her mind, frozen images of the worst day of her long life. The last image was of Alistair, her warrior poet, his final words sliding from his tongue, warming her, destroying her. The beat of dragon's wings, shouts from the castle, screams from the village.
"Not this time," she thought,
bounding down the iron steps, ignoring shouts from Gareth and Gryon behind her. Their orders applied to their captains, their legionnaires, not to her. They could fight for control, for power, but she was of a single mind in this moment. Save them. Save as many of them as she could. Their dark, sinewy forms streaked across the sky, blotting out the sun, casting dark shadows upon the world. Though Gwen knew the dragons could attack any part of the castle from any direction, it was the second wave she was more concerned with, and they could only come through the front gates. She ran. Men and women garbed in armor fell behind her as if they weren't moving, though they too were running. Those on horseback were no match for her speed either, the horse's eyes wide as she accelerated past, skidding and changing direction as she passed through each inner gate. And then the front gate stood before her, a large group of legionnaires behind it, awaiting the enemy. Thud! The battering ram shook the iron gate. Gwen had to get the legionnaires away, spread them out. The soldiers knew this from their training, but old habits were hard to change, and none of these men and women had ever faced a dragon, much less the several that swooped down now from above. Thud! The ground under her feet shook as she raced forward, waving her arms.
"Disperse!" she shouted. "Spread out!"
Numerous faces turned halfway toward her, torn between the threat behind the iron gates and her barked command. And then their training kicked in. They scrambled around each other, heading in all directions, filling the courtyard, leaving several arms' lengths between each of them.
Good,
Gwen thought. It would at least give them a chance. The dragons would try to herd them, as they did 84 years ago, like sheep, but it would be harder now that they weren't gathered in bunches. She spotted an Orion atop the wall, manning the gate. With a burst of speed, Gwen raced directly toward the wall, throwing herself up it. She ran up the wall, reaching the surprised Orion's side in an instant. The woman was protected by a metal chamber flanking the gates. Another Orion waited in a similar position on the opposite side.
"Situation?" Gwen asked.
The purple-eyed woman was clearly one of the 100 or so channelers responsible for the iron defenses that had been implemented since the tragedy of the dragon massacre. She glanced at Gwen's cheek, where she could feel her fate mark continuing to burn. The Orion shook away her surprise and said,
"Gwendolyn Storm, thank Orion you are here. They made landfall right on top of us, pouring from the ships. They are still coming.
What are you waiting for?"
"Orders."
Gwen thought of the two brothers barking commands at the captains in the throne room. The situation was chaotic enough without adding a power struggle to it.
"I've got your orders. Initiate all ore defenses."
The woman hesitated for a moment. Gwen was somewhat famous, given her fate mark, but she wasn't in the chain of command. Her eyes snapped to the gates as another heavy thud reverberated through the wall. Gwen grabbed her shoulders, steadying her eyes back on her.
"I have lived through this before. These ironclads have not. Your captains have not. Listen to me."
The woman, seeming to realize the truth of her words, nodded. Then she raised a hand, spinning in a circle. Gwen watched as, from dozens of other protected areas of the castle, Orions raised their hands in recognition of the signal. She dropped her hand, placing it on the wall of the iron chamber and closing her eyes, concentrating. The iron rippled, and then began to move. Gareth Ironclad. Gareth knew now wasn't the time to argue with his brother, but several of the captains were turned toward him, awaiting orders. He opened his mouth to speak, his teeth clamped shut, nearly biting off his tongue, when Gryan barreled into him from the side. He hit the metal floor heavily, the breath gasping from his lungs. They rolled several times before coming to rest. He was vaguely aware of the captains brawling nearby, half for him and half for Gryan. The recognition made him ill. They were under attack, and their captains couldn't even save their petty differences for another time. Neither could his brother, it seemed. Gryan held him down.
"I warned you, brother. You should have stayed away."
Gareth couldn't breathe, couldn't speak. But that didn't mean he was defeated, though he pretended he was, letting his shoulders slump, his eyes close. He bucked his head forward as hard as he could, smashing his forehead into Gryan's nose. Blood spurted out, and his brother howled, clutching his face. But he wasn't done. He'd promised to be the sword, and that's what he would be. He grabbed Gryan by the collar of his shirt, hefting him up, slamming him against the wall.
"We are all going to die. We'll discuss the throne later. For now, I am king. Agreed?"
Shocked, his brother nodded, his eyes wide.
"Say it."
"You are king," he said,
blood dripping from his lips. Gareth released him, and his brother slumped to the floor. He turned to face his captains, who had stopped their fighting to watch the brothers do battle.
"You all heard him?"
They nodded.
"Then go. Do your duty. Dragon defenses. We have a castle to save."
As they hustled for the exit, Gareth released a breath. He only hoped there was still time. Gryan stood, spitting a wad of blood in his direction.
"This changes nothing," he said.
He strode from the room, following the captains that were no longer his.
A dark-cloaked form appeared before Gareth.
"You escaped me once," Bane said, "but not again."
Bane Garrick. The true King Ironclad plucked a sword from a rack mounted to the wall. Bane knew it wouldn't be enough, despite the weakness he felt in his blood, the plague flowing through him. Shavos's curse. He strode forward, drawing his knife. There wasn't time to waste. He could feel the presence of his nemesis, his opposite, drawing near. Gareth swung, a graceful arc of steel slashing through the air. Bane sidestepped nimbly, feeling his death mark burst to life atop his skull. Before the king could finish his stroke, Bane leapt forward, thrusting his knife into his midsection. Clang! Surprised, Bane barely managed to maintain his balance as Gareth shoved him back. His sword had blocked the strike, somehow sweeping across in time to protect him. Bane grinned. This almost made the entire event all the sweeter. Death was death, but there was something to be said for a death truly earned. He danced forward, dodging another expert blow from Gareth. He lashed out with a foot, kicking the king in the knee, hearing a satisfying crunch as he fell to one knee, hobbled. He dropped his knife, punching Gareth in the face 5 times in short succession. Ironclad fell back, his sword skittering from his hands. Bane retrieved his knife. It felt cold against his warm palm. He stood over Gareth, whose face was a bloody mess, one eye already closed from the swelling.
"Now you die," Bane said, plunging the knife down toward the king's chest.
Gareth rolled unexpectedly, and the knife missed, slamming into the metal floor. Bane's stroke was so powerful that the blade not only bent but snapped, its point clattering away. Slightly annoyed now, Bane dropped the blunt weapon, turning to face his resourceful foe, who was back on his feet, fists raised and ready for a fight. Gareth spat out a wad of blood and said,
"Come on, Bane. What else you got?"
"If you only knew," Bane thought.
He was about to finish him when there was a heavy sound as something landed on the roof. A thrill ran through him.
"He's here."
Roan Loren.
Roan had sensed his cousin's presence the moment they'd come within range of Faria. It was like a dark cloud in his mind, a swarming feeling of nothingness. He told the Empress to steer Ciri toward the castle apex. To his surprise, she continued to follow his advice. The pain of those she'd lost had made her numb. He felt awful he'd been unable to save her dragon master, but the woman's will died the moment her dragon had fallen. As they'd soared over the castle, Roan had taken it all in. The other dragons launching themselves at the walls, most gathering at the gate, trying to melt it down as the foot soldiers smashed it again and again with a battering ram. The castle defences coming alive as the Orion channelers wove their magic, iron spikes bursting from the walls, killing soldiers in waves. The dragons recognising the threat, taking to the sky, but not before one was pierced in the breast by an enormous steel shard. The dragon fell, landing with a thunderous crash amidst the Eastern Legionnaires, who fell upon it with sword and lance. The residents of Ironwood were not idle either, or panthers bursting from the foliage, falling upon the Calypsians with claw and tooth. Orhawks appeared too, doing battle with the dragons in the sky. Fiery plumes erupted from the dragons' mouths, vaporizing several of the hawks, while others managed to slip past, pecking and clawing at the beasts' necks. All in all, it was war, chaotic, furious, violent. And then he'd seen her. Gwendolyn Storm, a flash of steel armor and silver hair, racing along the wall, cutting down the dozens of Calypsians that had already scaled their way into the castle.
How?
The last time he'd seen her, she was imprisoned by his sister, Rhea Loren, in Night's End, her fate tied to his own mission. And yet she was here, and with a shock, he realized he'd always expected her to be, just as he expected to see Gareth. "It's why I'm here," he thought. Rivers of fate coming together, joining, coalescing. The urge to stop, to go to her, to show himself, it was a force of nature, a lightning strike in his brain, but he resisted. If any of them survived this, there would be time for tearful reunions later. Darkness closed in, as Ciri landed atop the throne room. Roan grabbed Raven's shoulder, forcing her to look at him. Her eyes were vacant, each blink slow and tired.
"All is not lost," Roan said. "Until we are dead, there is hope. Never forget that. Now go. Save your people."
"I should have listened to you," she said, her eyes casting over the castle. "I've destroyed everything."
Roan shook his head, feeling a sudden tenderness toward this broken woman, a victim of circumstance and the pressure of an entire empire weighing on her shoulders.
"It's not your fault. You made the right decision. Shanalyn betrayed you. This is on him."
He cupped her cheek softly.
"May we meet again."
He flung his foot over the dragon, dropping the distance to the roof, landing in a crouch. Without looking back, he slid down the domed roof, cringing in pain as his ankle turned when he fell onto the top of the stairs in front of the throne room. He pushed healing into his leg, his chest instantly warming. Light crept from the edges of his shirt. Inside, two men stared at him.
"You need a haircut," Gareth said, somehow managing one of his token smirks despite being battered, bloody, and bruised.
One of his eyes was hidden behind a mound of swelling.
"You look like hell," Roan returned.
Bane said,
"That's where you're both headed."
"Hello, cousin,"
Roan said, stepping inside the throne room.
"Peacemaker. It's been a long time. Not long enough."
Despite his easy words, Roan felt a slash of fear burrow through him. Bane was unpredictable, and his very presence felt like a harbinger of doom. There was something different about him. It was subtle, but Roan could see the way his hands shook. Before he could contemplate the meaning, Bane said,
"Good luck,"
and whirled, grabbing a sword from a rack on the wall, spinning it deftly toward Gareth. Roan leapt into action, weaponless, naught but his fate mark to protect them both. Instinct drove him to thrust out his arms, and a burst of light shot from his fingers. When Bane's blade hit the light, it stopped and stuck. He tried to yank it back, but doing so only caused it to shatter into a thousand shards, each tinkling to the floor like broken glass.
"I see you've learned a few new tricks," Bane said. "But so have I."
He slammed his foot to the floor, which cracked, the metal separating and a jagged vein quaking as it broke apart. Roan dove to the side, narrowly avoiding being sucked into the widening void. The roof above them began to crumble, ragged chunks of iron breaking away and tumbling into the abyss. Now Bane and Gareth were on one side, Roan on the other.
"Oh, gods, he's dead. I've failed him."
Gwendolyn Storm. The spiked crimson dragon that had flown over her head had borne two passengers. One was dark-skinned, a Calypsian, but pressed against her back was another, his skin fair, his long blonde hair windblown behind him. Something about him was as familiar as the sunrise.
Roan.
She didn't take the time to ponder the impossibility of his sudden appearance, or why he would be riding a Calypsian dragon, instead leaping from one wall to the next, her momentum carrying her across the battle-scarred landscape beneath her. Despite the efforts of the channelers, the invaders had broken through the gate. Hundreds of Calypsians had died, but many more were behind them. The dragons seemed to be everywhere, raining fiery hell from the sky. The Orhawks had appeared moments earlier, the Orpanthers too, but the dragons were winning. Powerful, well-trained beasts born to kill. Gwen danced along the wall, deflecting arrows shot her way with her armor, catching a spear in mid-flight, launching it back from whence it came. The next gap between walls was too great a distance even for her, so she dropped to the ground. This far inside the castle's walls, the fighting was less fierce. Still, she took the time to slash down three invaders who had surrounded a single legionnaire. The man nodded his thanks, before racing off to find another foe. Several other legionnaires sprinted past her, followed closely by a shadow. The dragon released its flames and they died, cooked within their own armor, naught but charred corpses before their bodies hit the ground. The dragon landed before her, roaring. It was grey, the largest dragon she'd ever seen, its tail a mess of spikes and its teeth dripping black blades. The dragon's rider was male, his dark eyes pinning her with a stare. He barked a command, and the dragon reared back. Gwen felt no fear, not here, not in her home. She focused on her armor, on the connection she felt to the ore while in Ironwood. She could feel the ore melting, shifting, changing. She didn't move, not even as the dragon opened its maw, thrusting itself down upon her. As darkness surrounded her, Gwen thought, "This is for you, Alistair. May we meet again." Raven Sands. Ciri took to the air, soaring over the carnage. She saw Cronus and Channelin, killing, killing, so much killing. She saw three dead dragons, too, their enormous forms broken on the ground. "Oh, gods, we're losing," she realized. It was just as Rhone had said would happen. She watched as another dragon fell, a long metal spike having burst from the top of a wall, impaling it through the chest. Yes, they'd breached the gates, but the legionnaires were spread out enough to prevent the dragons from killing them in bunches. And the Easterners fought back fiercely, holding the invaders at bay, helped by the Orion defences, which launched blades and arrows from the face of the walls, hitting only enemies. "There is nothing I can do," she thought. This fight was over before it ever started. A preordained defeat. "Ciri!" she cried, her thoughts turning to Rhone. The dragon stirred beneath her, its wings undulating in broad strokes as it wheeled about. An oarhawk, its broad wings and sharp beak armored with iron, dove toward her, but Ciri melted it with a blast of heat. Molten drops of ore fell like rain. Raven steered Ciri back toward the castle apex. She couldn't save her soldiers, who weren't really her soldiers anymore, nor could she save the Dragonia. When Channelin had betrayed her, he had sealed their fate. But she could save Rhone. He had tried to help her, and she would return the favor. It was this thought alone that kept her from throwing herself from Ciri's back. For the second time, Ciri landed atop the iron dome, her claws skittering for purchase. "Down," Raven commanded, and her dragon slid to the steps below, maneuvering its head through the doorway. Raven leapt to her feet and ran along the dragon's neck, dodging spikes. Standing atop Ciri's head, she took in the situation. A wide crack ran down the center of the space, tearing the throne itself in half. On one side was darkness, a dark-cloaked form seeming to suck away all light. He had his hands clamped around another man's neck. The man's face was turning red. On the other side was Rhone, surrounded by light, which was pouring from his fingertips. The light shot across the chasm, crashing in waves against the darkness. But again and again and again it was repelled. Rhone's eyes were focused but full of fear. "He bears a tattooia," Raven thought, "like fire." For some reason, this fact didn't surprise her. Raven didn't know who either of the forms on the opposite side were to him, but this was her debt to repay. She snapped her whip at a cleft in the metal ceiling, felt it catch, and then swung forward, letting her momentum carry her toward the cloaked form. Behind her, she heard Ciri shriek, although the meaning of the sound didn't register in her brain, which was fully focused ahead. She leaned back and smashed her heels into the center of the cloak, surprised by the force of the impact, which was like hitting a stone wall. Still, the form toppled over, and she landed on top of him. His fingers were ripped from the other man's throat, and a gush of breath exploded from the man's lips as he twisted to the side, gasping and coughing. And then the dark-cloaked form was upon her, and she could see his face, her mouth opening in surprise when she saw the young face, barely older than that of a boy, his smooth, pale cheeks like frosted glass. Something burned atop his head, a marking that instantly reminded her of Fire, her sister. And she knew. This was the death-marked boy everyone was talking about. He touched her, and the world spun away. Everything was still. Everything was silent. She blinked against the brightness of the sun. A pile of ashes rested nearby. "The unburning tree," she thought, "which had been burned to ash the moment of Fire's death. I'm back in Calypso. Impossible." She stood, looking around, feeling as if she were in a dream. "Where are the gods?" she wondered.
and then,
"Whisper!"
She charged across the dusty landscape, barreling into Whisper's quarters. Empty. Whirling, she raced back the way she'd come, this time entering the council room from the private rear entrance. The head of the dragon throne rose before her, golden scales shimmering.
"Thank the gods," she thought,
seeing Whisper past the throne, kneeling before it. Her eyes were downcast, and she seemed to be praying. When she lifted her head, her eyes were brown pools. Their eyes met.
"I'm sorry, Raven,"
Whisper said. The apology sent a shiver of fear through Raven, though she wasn't sure why.
"Sister," she said, "you have nothing to apologize for."
Her own tears dribbled from her eyes as the events of the last day finally sank in, catching her from behind. Ryder dead. Heron dead. Ciri's scream, which she only just realized was one of pain. Goggin, left behind to drown. Her Dragonia, her soldiers, all dead or dying.
"I have nothing," she realized,
her tears flowing faster. Movement in the throne made her recognize they weren't alone, that Whisper hadn't been praying to an empty chair, but bowing to the seat's occupant. A familiar face peered around at her.
"Ah, my dark-haired niece," the woman said. "How I've missed you. And my throne. Aunt Viper."
Strong hands grabbed her from behind, shoving a sack over her head. Whisper screamed.
105. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Bane Garrick. After transporting the Calypsian Empress back to her palace, Bane reappeared in Feria. He still had some unfinished business to attend to. He stumbled, his energy flagging, even more so because of the plague now working its way through his body. Rhone had found a way to cross the chasm and was now helping Gareth Ironclad to his feet, supporting his weight as the king gasped for breath. Angry red finger marks ringed his throat. To his surprise, Bane felt no satisfaction. Rhone finally noticed his presence and said,
"Did you kill her? Did you kill Empress Sans?"
"No."
Although Bane had been tempted to end Raven Sans the way he'd ended her mother, something had told him doing so would have sacrificed any opportunity he had to talk to the peacemaker. And that was his priority. Rhone nodded thoughtfully. "I won't lie. I'm surprised. Still, I was hoping you were gone." There wasn't anger in his tone, not exactly. More like tiredness, exhaustion. Bane understood. He was feeling exhausted himself. Using his fate mark always did that to him. He'd need a long sleep after today.
"I'm glad I got your attention."
Rhone sighed. Gareth's eyes were fluttering. It seemed everyone was tired.
"What do you want, Bane? Are you going to try to kill the king again? If so, get on with it."
Bane managed to laugh, though he really did feel on the verge of collapse.
"I wasn't really going to kill him."
At that, Rhone's eyes narrowed.
"So you were just strangling him for your own amusement? I was seeing how far you'd go for him. I was seeing how committed you are to your role as peacemaker. You were testing me."
The words came out cold.
"Yes. You see, cousin, we are one and the same. Two sides of the same coin. Death and life. Dark and light. Violence and healing. Without one, the other cannot exist. I am nothing like you."
"Oh?
You mean your quest hasn't taught you the truth yet? I can prove it. The Western Oracle breathed life into both of us from the same fate mark. That coin I mentioned. She split it in half."
Bane saw the light enter Rhone's eyes, and he knew he had him. The Lorraine Prince was hungry for knowledge, and Bane was more than willing to show him one version of the truth.
"Let me show you," Bane said, "and then you can decide for yourself. Take my hand."
106. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Rhone Loren. Rhone knew it might be a trap, but he had to walk into it anyway. His body was bone-weary, but his mind churned with the need for information. Thus far he'd discovered nothing of substance in Citadel, and he was at the end of his patience. Bane, despite seeming so straightforward at first,
"I kill rulers," had seemed to be his mantra, was fast becoming an enigma, another question with no answer. He could have killed Gareth. He could have killed Empress Sands. But he didn't. Rhone needed to find out why. He lay Gareth gently on the ground, and then pushed some more of his healing power into him.
Gareth's eyes flattered open.
"I thought I was dreaming," he said. "Do you dream about almost dying a lot?" Rhone asked, cupping his hand to the king's cheek.
His skin felt warm, and Rhone longed to feel it with his lips. In a perfect world, Bane would disappear and never return, and they could be happy. But it wasn't a perfect world. Far from it. Gareth said,
"It seems to happen to me a lot."
"You should really be more careful," Rhone quipped, his heart swelling with love for this man. Gareth said,
"You found me."
"Yes," Rhone said, but Gareth's eyes were already closing.
"I will always find you. Promise me."
"I promise." Rhone spun his finger in an arc, releasing shreds of light as he moved, creating a white shield around Gareth's sleeping form. The effort took so much out of him, he almost curled up in a ball next to the king. Taking deep breaths, he fought to his feet, where Bane continued to hold his hand out toward him. An offer. Something about his expression surprised Rhone. He almost looked sad. Rhone took a step forward, breathing in and out, preparing himself for whatever was to come. And then he took Bane's hand. The world he stepped into was a shadow world without beginning or end. Rhone seemed to be floating or sinking or something else he couldn't describe. His exhaustion had fallen away, leaving him strangely energized. Bane was there, watching him carefully, their hands still entwined. He, too, seemed refreshed, the weary lines on his brow having smoothed themselves out.
"Watch. Listen. Remember."
The shadows vanished, and all around him were words, clarifying and fading like ink-read messages dipped in water. He couldn't read them fast enough to make any sense of what they said. And then she was there, a woman garbed in all red after the manner of the Furia. Even without Bane telling him, Rhone knew who she was. The Western Oracle. A boy was writing furiously at a table as she spoke, her eyes rolled back into her head. Instinctively, Rhone knew he was her son, later to become the man who called himself Bear Blackboots. Bane motioned toward the table, which was lit by a flickering lantern.
"Look,"
he said, though his lips did not move. Rhone craned his neck, anxious now.
This was what he'd been searching for. This was the answer to all his questions about his origin and his purpose, and the path to achieve peace in the Four Kingdoms.
The words came into focus, the ink still wet, glistening darkly under the lantern's glow.
"In the beginning, there shall be death and there shall be light, and they shall be two sides of the same coin."
Rhone felt as if he was falling as the scene faded, replaced by shadows once more.
"No!"
he tried to scream, though he failed to make a sound.
"Do you see now?" Bane asked. "Do you see the truth? We are bound to peace. Only together can we achieve it." "I don't believe you," Rhone said. "This is a trick." "I am not a trickster," Bane said. "You should know that by now. I kill because I must, because the deaths I choose will pave a path to peace, just as the lives you save are necessary for the greater good."
Something about his words rang true, and yet Rhone couldn't contemplate a world where Bane was necessary for the greater good.
"I don't want to hear any more. You would choose blindness over truth. I would choose life over death."
There it was again, that sadness.
The boy's eyes were full of it, deep pools of melancholy, as fathomless as the depths of the ocean. He blinked, and they were gone, replaced by dark arrogance and casual indifference. A mask? Or simply another face?
"What is happening to you?" Roan asked.
"Nothing of concern to you," Bane said.
"Take this."
It was a round black marble, its surface swirling as if filled with restless storm clouds.
"It is infused with a measure of my power. You may use it only once to go wherever you will. I hope, however, that you will choose this place, where you will find me. We can talk at length as we rest. I can teach you all that I know."
Roan knew it was a gift, even if Bane offered it only out of his own self-interest. Bane's hand shook as he gave it to him.
"Thank you," Roan said, "though I shall not return. We shall see."
The shadows disappeared, and Roan was once more beside Gareth, the glowing ethereal shield casting a gentle white light across his sleeping form. Outside, a dragon released a mournful cry. Roan sensed the battle was nearly over. Roan considered Bane's offer and was sorely tempted. The boy, his cousin, despite the darkness inside him, knew much of the Western Oracle and her teachings. He could return to him and ask any question he wanted. But at what cost? He looked at Gareth, drawing his hand across his hair, brushing his dark locks away from his face.
"He is so peaceful," he thought.
"My presence here will only bring Bane back." As much as he wanted to linger in Feria, to spend time with Gareth and Gwendolyn beneath the shade of the Iron Forest, to jape and tell stories about how they came to be here, he knew he could not stay. He was spent, the last of his energy drained, and he knew if he didn't act fast, he would fall into a deep sleep. He held the dark, storm-filled marble in his hand, staring into it. And then he made a decision. When he blinked, Feria disappeared, along with the marble.
"No,"
a lonely boy cried.
"I am sorry," Roan thought.
The world came into focus once more. A familiar room stacked with piles of paper, maps, scrolls, and, of course, smelling strongly of thick, horrid tea, surrounded him now.
"I was hoping you'd return,"
a voice said. He turned to find Lady Windy Sands watching him with interest. She didn't look surprised, as if she'd been expecting him to appear from thin air at exactly this moment.
"There is something I need to show you."
"Tomorrow," Roan said, his words slurring. "Or the next day."
Finally, his legs failed him. He slumped to the floor and slept, the light of his life mark fading into the dusky darkness.
107. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Gwendolyn Storm. The moment before the dragon's enormous maw had closed over her, Gwen had sheathed her entire body in awe, infusing it with power from her hero mark. At the same time, she'd taken a deep breath, holding it in her chest as she felt the blade-like teeth crunching down upon her, clacking and clanking off her armor. The clanking stopped, and the searing, burning heat arrived, seeming to surround her, as if she were standing in the direct center of a fiery inferno.
"I've been swallowed whole," she thought,
feeling a shred of fear run through her at the realization that her insane plan had actually worked. Her lungs were starting to burn, so she figured she'd better get started with the next phase. She lifted her sword and started cutting. The dragon's roar was more of a rumble this deep inside of the beast, but Gwen still felt it in her bones. It was like she was a part of it now. Its pain was her pain. But still she hacked and slashed, her strokes becoming more vigorous as she gained more room. And then, with a final enormous swing, she felt its flesh give way and she spilled out. She channeled her aura away from her mouth and nose, sucking in beautifully cool air. Next, she uncovered her eyes. Thick, dark blood and ichor covered her, dripping from her armor, pooling on the ground. On either side of her was the dragon, split into two pieces, its chest ripped open, its enormous eyes staring at her but seeing nothing.
Its spiked tail, to her disgust, continued to twitch, some kind of post-death involuntary reflex. The attack came from behind, though she sensed it well before it arrived, diving to the side, feeling the whoosh of a blade rush past. Her foe landed deftly on his feet, pivoted, and then came at her again. Due to the vigor with which he attacked, she knew this was the dragon rider. It was said the riders and dragons were connected by some mystical tether, bound to each other by something stronger than blood. And this man was supremely pissed she had killed his dragon. But that wouldn't save him. He fought valiantly, but, as she always did, Gwendolyn Storm emerged alive. Shanalyn, however, dragon master and traitor, did not.
108. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Gareth Ironclad. He awoke to the lingering warmth of lips on his cheek.
Rhone,
he whispered, willing it to not have been a dream, willing him to still be there, by his side. The throne room was empty, a large crack running down its center, the iron throne itself decimated, half of it missing. Above, the ceiling and roof were torn in two, the darkening evening sky beginning to fill with stars, some of which streaked across Orion's great forest. Smoke hung like fog in the air. Everything was strangely silent, too silent for the battle that had been raging earlier. Gareth stood and noticed something was lighting the room. He searched for the source, only then realizing the light was all around him, moving as he moved, like a full-body shield. Even as he stared at it in awe, it slowly disappeared.
Rhone,
he said again, feeling the emptiness caused by the departure of a loved one, wondering whether it could ever be filled. A croaky voice broke the silence. He craned his ear, trying to determine the source. It sounded close. He stepped outside, his mouth falling open, his eyes widening. For he'd come face to face with a dragon, its fierce red eyes boring into him. Its body jerked as it tried to move, to lunge at him, but was held firmly by dozens of oar chains attached to various parts of the castle.
Ah,
he thought, the final Ferian defense against dragons worked. Beyond the dragon, fires burned here and there, but all in all, the castle seemed to be intact. We've won, or at least survived. And they'd captured a dragon in the process. He was pretty sure he knew whose dragon it was, in fact, though he didn't yet know how to feel about that. The croaky voice came again, and this time it was even closer, and he was able to make out the word, his name.
Gareth?
He peered into the gathering darkness, a chill running through him when he realized who had spoken. Gryan, lying awkwardly against the metal steps, pinned by the dragon's powerful foot. One of its claws vanished between his shoulder blades. It was obvious to Gareth what had happened. After fleeing the throne room, Gryan had changed his mind. He'd returned, perhaps hoping to find Gareth. His twin said his name again.
Gareth.
I'm here, brother, he said. I'm going to get you out of there.
No,
Gryan rasped.
You'll only get yourself killed.
Then I'll get help.
We both know it's too late for that. It's also too late for this. But I want to say...
He swallowed a cry of pain as the dragon shifted its foot slightly.
I want to say I'm sorry.
Gryan, none of that matters.
It does matter. I was a fool, blinded by my own...
Another wave of pain.
Ambition and loss.
Loss. That word, now more than ever, seemed to echo through the night like the beating of a great heart. Gryan took one final breath, shuddering, and his body went still.
109. Off the coast of the Eastern Kingdom. Goggin. Men like Goggin were not supposed to swim. It was a simple matter of bone density, muscle mass, and his inability to move his arms and legs in a manner graceful enough to keep his enormous bulk afloat. And yet,
after ripping off his weapons belt and letting his knives and scimitars sink to the bottom of the ocean, he clung to the wooden door with all his strength, long after the cries of his fellow Guanero had ceased, the dragon shrieks and beating wings fading away, the smoke from the burning ship dissipating, joining the clouds.
The clouds,
Goggin thought, as he stared up at the sky. He'd never really looked at them before. Sure, he'd seen them, perhaps even commented on their shape or the effortless way in which they blocked the harsh southern sunlight. But he hadn't seen them the way he saw them now. For they were each a one-of-a-kind creation, beautiful in the manner in which they moved, changed, adapted to the ever-shifting winds. He saw one that looked like a dragon, and it almost made him chuckle. Then came the stars, as infinite and innumerable as the individual grains of sand in the Skara. How they twinkled like winking gold coins. How they exploded, green bursts of color. How they soared across the night sky, crimson comets of light and beauty. The full moons rose from opposite ends of the sky. The red god Ruahi, the green goddess Luahi. Their paths, on 999 nights out of 1,000, were destined to miss, their hands outstretched and reaching, but passing, their loving touch unfulfilled. It felt like a metaphor for Goggin's own life, which suddenly felt small and meaningless. How many times had he thought he found love, only to have it blow up in his face? How many times had he drunken the pain away, laughed it away, japed it into oblivion?
I have never known true love, he realized.
And the thought brought a tear to his eye, the first in years, perhaps decades. His vision blurred and the moons wobbled. He blinked and breathed, and listened to the beat of his own heart, watching them as they climbed higher and higher, pulling themselves up by, it seemed, sheer strength of will and desire. Love raised them up. And then, his breath catching in his lungs, they kissed. A peck at first, and then something deeper, more passionate. Goggin looked away, feeling like an intruder. Clinging to his floating wooden door, he drifted away. When he awoke, squinting, the moon and stars were gone, fading into a day as bright as it was hot.
Too hot to be the east, he thought,
which meant the currents had pulled him south. But how far? Truth be told, he was surprised to be alive.
I am,
he thought, clinging to that thought the same way he'd clung to his wooden door as dragonfire had rained down upon them. His shirt had already dried in the sun, and now he tugged his sleeves down to cover his hands, pulled his collar up to block as much of his face as possible. This was a sun that would eat a man alive if he wasn't careful. He remembered seeing the signal from Ryder to change course, to return home. Grudgingly, he'd given the order to his ship's captain, though he longed for a fight, for a chance to avenge his fallen Guanero. Then the unthinkable had happened. They'd been attacked by the rest of the Dragonia. Now all his Guanero were gone.
Bastards,
he thought angrily. He suspected Shanalin, but it could have been any of the Dragon Masters, really. Any of them except Ryder, of course. She was as loyal as they came. Now she was probably dead. He wondered if Raven had survived her Dragon Rider's mutiny. She was a good empress, less cold than her mother, and more patient than fire. Strong, but kind. Beautiful, but humble. Capable, but aware of her own weaknesses. The level of his own admiration for her took him by surprise. How long had he felt this way? With an unexpected reddening of his cheeks, he felt embarrassed at the many foolish acts he'd committed in her presence. The drunken singing, the half-naked japing, the gorging and swilling and dancing and carrying on with other women.
Why do I act like that?
He wondered. He laughed at his own pointless thoughts. Evidently it took being shipwrecked and floating aimlessly in a vast ocean to get him to reflect on his past. Still, his thoughts of Raven kept him from falling into despair. He searched the horizon in all directions, trying to get his bearings. Nothing. No sign of land or life.
I need food. I need water. Water more than food.
Another laugh burst from his throat.
The irony,
he muttered, his voice coming out a croak. Being thirsty and surrounded by water, but unable to drink any of it. With nothing better to do, he closed his eyes and slept. He awoke to darkness. For a moment he thought he was underwater, and he held his breath, thrashing about to try to force himself to the surface. Pain shot through his knuckles and elbows as they smashed against his makeshift wooden craft. Slowly, his breathing returned to normal, his eyes settling on the comforting sea of stars above. The moons were nearly at their peak, but tonight, like most others, they wouldn't kiss, the previous night's passion already a fading memory.
So sad,
Goggin thought, to live one's life in sight of love, but rarely able to act on it. He snorted.
I am no poet, he thought. I should stick to hitting and stabbing things.
Too bad all his weapons were resting at the bottom of the ocean. Though hunger twisted his stomach in knots, the thirst was far worse, a fire raging in his throat, turning his mouth to scorched desert sand. Water lapped against the sides of his boat, and he was sorely tempted to cup his hands and drink. He stayed his hands, however, knowing all too well that the salt water would only dehydrate him faster, hastening his death.
Maybe I'll sleep some more, he thought.
So he did. When he awakened, a white-feathered, yellow-beaked seabird was sitting on his chest, pecking at his arm.
Hello, little bird,
he tried to say, but all that came out was, The bird flew away. Sleep claimed him once more.
Water,
he thought. It might have been simpra, as good as it tasted. It even burned on the way down, though in a good way.
Choking, drowning, dying, can't breathe, can't breathe, can't...
He spluttered and gagged, sitting up sharply and vomiting all over his own lap.
Slowly, my friend,
a voice said. A hand patted his back gently.
I'm dreaming,
Goggin realized, blinking, looking around. A sparkling silver ocean lapped against a sandy shore. Squat, barrel-like trees with broad white leaves lined the beach. A grey-skinned man, his forehead broad and flat, his chin square, looked at him with concern.
Where am I?
Goggin asked. The man said,
Welcome to the Dreadnoughts. You are lucky to be alive. Alive, yes,
Goggin thought.
Lucky, not so much.
He accepted another drink from the man's cup. This time he sipped it. It was a small step for a large man. Then again, it was probably the largest step he'd ever taken in his life. He vowed it wouldn't be the last. He would find a way to return to Calip. And he would have his revenge on the traitors that took everything from him and his empress. 110. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Gareth Ironclad. 1 week after the Dragon Defense. An eventful week had passed, and Gareth had yet to encounter Gwen, so eventually he decided to go looking for her. As king, he'd been busy organizing the rechanneling of several castle walls that had been melted down by the dragons. The dragon carcasses also had to be removed, as well as the corpses of their enemies. The lot of them had been buried in an enormous pit dug on the plains, well away from the edge of the forest. The eastern dead had also been buried, but within the wood. It was a time of celebration, of victory, but also a time of mourning and sorrow for those they'd lost. Gareth didn't mind staying busy. It kept him from thinking too much about Roan. And, of course, there was the captured dragon to deal with. For now, he'd repositioned his 100 Orion channelers around an enormous iron hovel they'd created to imprison the beast. Empress Sand's dragon, he thought now, as he approached the gate to Gwen's forest dwelling. He shook his head. Never in a million years did he think his first prisoner as king would be a leather-winged, fire-breathing monster. He halted at the gate, turning back to the dozen guards that had been following him.
"Stay here," he said. They obeyed, and he marveled at how everything had changed the moment his brother had died. Even those who viewed Gareth as a failed shield couldn't deny the fact that his claim on the throne was complete. As expected, he found Gwen enjoying the comforts of her own home, a beautiful ore-sheathed tree in the midst of ironwood. She looked so content, leaning back with her eyes closed, her back supported by an enormous iron leaf that seemed to form to fit her body, that Gareth almost turned around and left, so as not to disturb her much-deserved rest.
"Don't you think we've spent enough time together?" she said, just as he was contemplating leaving.
Her eyes remained closed. It was a jape, although there was some truth to it.
"I heard you killed a dragon," Gareth said.
She shrugged.
"A big one."
She opened her eyes lazily, looked at him pointedly.
"They're all big. From the inside."
At that, she laughed.
"Just because I'm an old woman by human standards doesn't mean I can't learn a few new tricks."
Gareth grinned.
"Thank you." "For the dragon?" "It was my pleasure." "Not just for that. For everything. For believing in me. For not giving up on me." "You're welcome, but I did it for Rhone, not you."
"Really?"
"No, not really. Speaking of Rhone, he was here, in Feria. I know."
He tried to hide his surprise, failing miserably.
"Did you talk to him?"
She shook her head.
"I didn't find the time. Too many dragons flying about."
"He saved me, you know. Again. But it wasn't just him." Gwen's interest seemed to perk up. She shifted on her perch.
"Oh? Don't tell me your brother finally manned up and did the right thing."
Gareth laughed, despite the mention of his brother. Did she not know he was dead?
"Grian? It's not in his blood, and he was knocked out. I may or may not have had something to do with that. Believe it or not, when Bane and Rhone were doing their whole 'my darkness is bigger than your light' thing, Empress Raven Sands showed up out of nowhere and tackled Bane. He was choking the life out of me at the time. She saved my life."
Gwen's yellow eyes met his, narrowed, cat-like, but then rolled away.
"I suppose we should invite her over for tea, then."
He shook his head.
"I'm not saying it's the beginning of some kind of an alliance. That would be impossible, considering they just attacked us with a horde of dragons."
"A brood."
"What?"
"They call it a brood of dragons."
"Yes, well, I'm certain our good citizens would frown upon an alliance with the Calypsians."
Gwen's fingers danced over the branch, making ore flowers grow and then disappear.
"I don't much care for the Calypsians, but I despise the Sands."
"I know." There was silence for a few moments, each lost in their own thoughts, and then Gwen asked,
"Why do you think Raven Sands would save your life? It makes no sense to attack your castle and then protect you from Bane."
Gareth considered the question. It was one he had been pondering ever since Rhone left.
"I don't think she was completely in charge of what happened. It was almost as if she had doubts about the attack, but was powerless to stop it."
"You're defending her?"
"All I'm saying is there are some strange circumstances."
"Such as?"
"A dragon corpse washed up on shore. It was a big one, even bigger than the one you killed. No dragons were killed over the water by us, at least none that we know of."
Gwen frowned, but didn't say anything. Gareth continued,
"And now evidence of a shipwreck has been appearing. Planks, barrels, torn sails.
Those could have drifted in from anywhere.
They are charred, burnt. The damage looks to be from dragon fire. And the remnants of the Calypsian sigil are on the sails. The dragon."
Gwen chewed on that for a minute.
"What are you going to do?"
"I don't know yet.
Even with our new defences, we were lucky to survive the attack. We were even more fortunate the dragons ignored the village. They probably thought they could do what they wanted later after the castle had fallen. The first thing I am going to do, however, is cease all military actions on our borders. For now, we defend only."
"Do you think Grian will go for that?"
"It was a mistake coming here,"
he thought.
My problems are not hers. You don't know. Grian is dead.
With that,